I having such a great time. Are you guys having a great time?
Yeah.
I just want to share with you really quick one of my favorite things. I think that I've come here is that I wasn't going to spend a night. I was going to go back and forth because I didn't feel like I could afford a room. And besides, I like the comfort of my own home. And with Carmageddon coming in town last week, I was given a name, my name to somebody to I mentioned to somebody on that this phone bridge meeting that if I could find somebody, I would stay the night, but it didn't matter to me, and I was hoping nobody would show up. But I had a wonderful lady from New York, Susan, that I don't know if she's here or not, but she called me and said that I could share a room with her. And then a few days ago, lovely Tatiana from Hawaii called and said she was coming, so we became an international room, and it has been the most incredible experience. I think if I take away anything else, my buddies that I've made in my rooms since I've been here has just been such a gift. So if any of you ever consider coming and you don't know who to room with, just put your name in the pot. It really is amazing. And we had a little dorm room yesterday. Kailani ended up spending the night, so we had a little dorm room, and probably one of the best nights I've slept in a long time, sharing a little double bed with Kailani. yeah. Anyways, I'm still so honored that I got this position to call people and ask them to share their experience, strength, and hope. Again, I could have asked so many of you, and God put in my path these three people, and I'm so grateful that they're here and they're willing to share their stories. Yesterday was California. Tonight we have another Californian, but our panel today is throughout the United States. We have Maria Christina from New York. And we have Margie from Kansas, and we have Rowdy from Colorado. And they all have incredible recovery, and I can't wait to hear them. So we want to give them plenty of time. So here we go. I will pass the mic over to Rowdy and let him begin sharing his experience, strength, and honesty, how it works.
Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rowdy. I'm a compulsive eater. And I'm one of those skinny bitches I hated my whole life now. Stand up. I was sober in another fellowship for 17 years before I got abstinent, and every one of those inventories I did in that other fellowship listed people who were skinnier than me and people who could eat normally. I just hated them. I hated people who could eat normally and who didn't obsess and hate themselves the way that I did with food. So I've been abstinent since January 12th of 09. I've surrendered and being allowed to maintain over 60 pounds. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. And I've been very blessed to stay abstinent without a slip, and I feel very fortunate for that. So CEA, how it works. I was trying to collect my thoughts you know, what to share with you. And a lot of times what I like to talk about, first of all, are the lies that the disease tells me. And how it works for me is I need to be really conscious and aware of that. When I was about 6 years old, I looked in the mirror and I decided, Rowdy, you are so ugly that you will never be attractive in any way unless you have a good body. I don't know where that thought came from, but it was there. And that started an obsession with food and with my weight that almost killed me. And so the lies have been there from a very young age for me. And so, you know, I could go on for some time about what it was like. I was very anorexic for quite a while, and I was thinner than I am now, and I still felt fat every day. Every day, it just didn't matter. You know, it didn't matter how skinny I got. You know, I looked in the mirror, and what I saw was a lie. And then I was also bulimic, and then towards the end of my eating, the binges would get bigger and bigger. I would still only eat once a day, and I would starve myself the rest of the day, but every night I would make a commitment to myself that I wasn't going to eat that day. And every day I would do it until about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and then I would be out on the prowl, and I would be off looking for food, you know? And so at the end of my eating, I want to share with you that I would binge eat usually about 11, 12 at night. And I would eat such huge quantities, but I would also start falling asleep with food in my mouth and wake up aspirating and choking on that food. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to die this way. I'm going to die choking to death on binge food in the middle of the night. You know, what a glamorous way to go. All for this lie of trying to be thinner, trying to look differently than I look, you know. And so the thing about the lies that I want to share with you is that my disease told me that eating the way I ate made me feel better. That's a lie. Choking to death on binge food is a solution in my mind. It makes me feel better to eat that way. I ate the way I ate to get away from my pain, to run away from feelings, to celebrate, to deal with my sadness. All of this I turned to food for, you know, and the disease told me, hey, I've got a solution for you, Rowdy. You don't feel good. Why don't you, as the big book says, hit yourself over the head with a hammer to cure a headache? Because that's what I was doing, you know. The lies the disease tells me are so incredibly powerful, but they are ridiculous. Ridiculous. If you really step back and look at the lies, they're ridiculous. The disease tells me that my solution to life is to kill myself and eat in that horrible, self-destructive way, but it's going to make me feel better, you know? And maybe for about 3 or 4 minutes into that binge, I would kind of shut off and I would, quote-unquote, feel better. But what about the other 24 and a half hours of the day, you know? I was consumed with self-hatred. I was consumed with an obsession of the way, about the way that I looked. And so, but every night the disease would convince me again, go back to the food, Rowdy, it'll make you feel better, you know? And so I have to recognize how powerful the disease is in convincing me. As the big book says, there comes a time where we can no longer differentiate the true from the false. And that our alcoholic or our life in the food seems to us the only normal one. And that was certainly true for me. I had been in the food for so long, since I was a child, that it seemed the only normal life to me. You know, I didn't believe there was any way out. I really truly believed I was going to die that way. And I didn't have a choice, you know. So what I have to do is I have to work the tools so you guys can help me figure out what's true and what's not. Because today I still don't know the true from the false. Left to my own devices, I have no idea what's true and what's not, you know? Especially when food is involved or looking in a mirror. Trust me on that. So the other thing I wanted to share with you as far as how it works is about the time this program takes. And when I got abstinent and you guys told me what you did on a daily basis, I was mortified. Do you know how busy I am? I'm rowdy. I'm important. I've got a lot of things going on in life. You know, I'm way too busy to do all this work. You know, it seems completely overwhelming, but thank God I was desperate enough to try. I was desperate enough to try. And what I've recognized is this program, it does take a lot of work for me, you know. I work all my tools every day, period. I remember calling my beloved sponsor once and saying I didn't have time to do a question. And he said, Rowdy, I wish I would have known years ago the work was optional. And I just stopped. Do you know who you're talking to? Is what I wanted to say to him. But you know what? Every day for the last year and a half, I've given him a question every day. I always say he requires live outreach calls, but I like to say it that way because it makes it sound like I don't have a choice in the matter, but I do. So sometimes there are days where I'll call at least 15 people just to get 3 people to answer their phone. And I call him up on those days and tell him, I sure resented the hell out of you yesterday for how long it took, but I've been absent without a slip for some time, and I think that part of the reason is that I talk to four live people a day, him and three other people. And so I don't say those things to sound important. I say them because it takes a lot of time. You know, this program can. I weigh and measure everything, even if I go out, and it takes time. But the thing that I had to recognize was that, do you know how much time it took me to hate myself? Do you know how much time I spent hating the way I looked, looking in mirrors, walking downtown L.A. in those big glass windows, just obsessing about how fat I was, obsessing about when I was going to eat, what I was going to eat, trying everything in my power not to eat, and let alone the cruising of the convenience stores and the fast food joints and planning what I was going to tell them like they gave a crap. I would always order my food, and then I would say, now, what did she want? Oh, yeah. And because I had to have two meals, you know. You don't go to a fast food restaurant and order one meal. So I just wanted to touch briefly on that. The time this program takes is nothing for me compared to the time it took to obsess and self-hate, you know, when I was in the food. And I have to remember that because my life's busy. I work another 12-step fellowship. I'm very active in that. I have sponsees in that program. And sometimes I get overwhelmed, and I have to always remind myself, it's a lie, Rowdy. It's a lie, you know. You got to know, Rowdy, when the disease is lying to you. And then the last thing I wanted to share about was just the steps. Literature and writing is one of our tools, and I truly, truly believe that the steps, absolutely, when it comes down to it, the steps are what changed me. My problem is not that I ate like a pig. My problem is why I ate like a pig. I thought my problem was what I ate and how much I ate. That had nothing to do with it. It was all about why I ate the way I ate. And that had to be changed. I had to learn new habits by weighing and measuring and getting on my phone calls and going to meetings. But the bottom line is I had to change who I was. Until I changed who I was, I could not change the way that I ate. And the steps are what change who we are, you know. The steps for me create a spiritual experience. And if you read the appendices in the back of the big book, it talks about what a spiritual experience is. And my favorite part of it is it just is a new way of reacting to life. And that's what I needed. Because my way to react to life was to eat or starve myself. Those were my tools right there. You know, so I had to work the steps so that I could change who I was, so that I didn't have to eat the way that I ate anymore. And I didn't have to try to, you know, to be killing myself on a daily basis with the food. So I feel so honored and grateful for the steps, you know, because they changed who I am. And they facilitated a relationship with a power greater than myself beyond anything I could have imagined. And so the last thing I'll say about that is that when I look at the disease of compulsive eating, I feel like I'm this grain of sand, and the disease is the Rocky Mountains. You know, it is so much bigger than me. Left to my own devices, the disease will and did win every time. It is so much more powerful than me. It'll convince me of anything to get me to eat, you know, but my higher power is way bigger than the Rocky Mountains. And I have to access that so that I have a fighting chance against that disease. You guys saved my life. Thank you for letting me share.
Should I stand up or sit down? Preference? Okay. Is it okay? I'm Margie, compulsive eater. And I'm grateful to be here and being of service from Kansas City, Missouri. Yeah. I'm old school, so I brought pictures. I remember hearing Fred S. talk about physical evidence. And, you know, there's lots of parts to this program, but it really makes a difference if it can see where people have been and where they are now, too. and that's why I bring those along. I was pretty heavy as a kid. I stayed that way until I was about to hit high school. I starved myself for one summer, dropped 30 pounds, and used starving in order to keep my weight under control while I was going through high school years. I got out from under my parents when I moved out. My weight rocketed up. And I pretty much stayed that way through my young adult life. I got to this program when I was 32 years old. I had been in another program for about 3.5 years. I'd put down the food only when I realized I was doing exactly with the food what I had done with alcohol. And when I got to this program, it was after a horrendous holiday season. I was just humiliating myself over and over again with the food, and these people kept showing up that I knew from that other program talking about this one, talking about how. And so I ended up making my way to a meeting in January of 92. And because, you know, I was 32, the weight came off pretty quickly, which was a lovely thing, I thought, you know. And I was real busy trying to get it perfect, because I thought if I did it perfectly, my life would be perfect and I wouldn't have any problems anymore. You know how we love to do. And of course, you know, I had every kind of experience in this program, an abstinent, that I had before the program, you know, when I was in the food. And that's where I've really learned. That's where I've started learning how to live one day at a time without picking up. I haven't done the program perfectly that whole time, but I have been maintaining my weight release for over 19 years. And I'm really grateful for that. The pictures you see in there, there's before pictures, but there's after pictures too, because I've done a lot of fun stuff. You know, it's like a whole world has opened up of ways to have fun. And I really was living my life on the basis of I've got to have the food so I can have fun. But it's amazing how much more I've been able to do and enjoy with not being in the food. I remember one time I was talking to someone about the program and talked about 3 meals, weighed and measured, nothing in between, you know. And they said, well, what do you do between meals? I said, well, I live my life. And, you know, and I've started to realize what I really enjoy in life, what's fun to me. And I really did not have a sense of that at all when I was in the food. And so I'm just really grateful. I'm grateful for all the changes. I'm grateful for my recommitted abstinence, because I haven't done it perfectly the whole time. No. You know, but I'm recommitted from January 6, 2004. And, you know, what an adventure. The thing I did right at the times when I picked up the food because I was getting complacent about the program was I called my sponsor and told him I did it. And I recommitted and I did the questions and I, you know, really poured myself into making sure I stayed connected into the program. And that's made all the difference for me. And what I found is in those times of recommitment, too, what I really had to do was get myself back into working all the tools, all the time. And I think that's been the thing that has really helped me to maintain my abstinence one day at a time. And I've come to think of the 7 tools as spiritual practices. You know, I work the steps. You know, I'm right in the middle of doing our 4-step inventory again. And I've done it a number of times through the years, but, you know, I'm still finding new stuff. And I've done the inventory from the other program a number of times, too. I love them both. I wouldn't change either of them. But the fact is there's always something new in this book of life. You know how you read a book again? My life's like that, too. And I have new stuff that I get to learn all the time, one day at a time, about living without picking up the food. But, you know, the tools have been really powerful for me because I'm one of us. I love my structure. If I can have some structure I can live with, then there's room for me to be creative and have some fun. And And it's like I have a little mental checklist each day. Okay, did I do this? Did I do that? Did I do that? You know, and I know if I did all that, oh, I'm okay. I'm okay, you know. And it's great because it just really is a plan for living. I'm grateful for the traditions. They give me tools for knowing how to be with other people in the world. You know, how we can be in our fellowship. And it's been amazing to see some of the stuff that I've experienced with that. In See How, I had this experience of my sponsor saying she'd sponsor me, but only if I started a meeting in Kansas City. So I did. I did, and it was, well, it was 3 years ago last August that I started one meeting. And soon after that, someone else started another meeting and another meeting. And we have 5 meetings now in Kansas City. You all know who to thank for that if you've ever met my sponsor. Thank you, Ray. Yeah, I'm so grateful. And, you know, that fellowship means so much to me. And I'm very grateful for the bridge line that's been there for me when I haven't been able to make face-to-face. But you know what? If you don't hear me much on the bridge line, it's because I know I want to keep showing up and supporting the face-to-face meetings in my community. There's something about being in the room and being with people like that that, you know, I can't fully experience on phone calls. And I told you I'm old school anyway, you know, but it's just who I am, and it's just what life is like for me, even when I'm here. And, you know, and at the conference and enjoying making new friends and seeing old friends, I still call people at home. And I say, oh, we're doing this. This is what's going on, you know, and because I know they're going to be here, if not next year, the next year and the next year, too, you know, and it's a blessing. I love the phone calls. I love connecting up with people. And I do that thing, too. I just keep calling and calling and calling, you know, because that way I know in my heart of hearts that I'm not building up secrets to eat over. Because I ate over the secret feelings. You know, I ate over that stuff and feeling bad about myself. The best thing I could think of to do to not feel was go to the food. And that's been with me a long time. And this stuff, it helps me one day at a time to keep doing what I know will keep me free from compulsive eating. I'm really grateful for sponsorship. I'm really grateful for my sponsor. And I love doing my writing. And I love reading my writings to my sponsor. You know, I get spiritually fed by it, but my sponsor does too. And one of the things about being a sponsor and continuing to show up and do this program through the years for me has been that, you know, I'll be someone's sponsor for a while, but at some point, probably, it's going to be time for them to switch and have another sponsor. I've had a lot of sponsors through the years. And actually, right now, I'm available. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. So if you're looking for a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor and we have a compatible time, you know, come up and see me after the meeting. This is what reminds me what I need to be doing each day. Sometimes it's in telling someone else what I'm doing and talking to them about their program. I get the reminders I need. So, you know, service, oh, you know what's on my heart right now? It's about the convention, the convention and the business conference that we just had. You know, I'm one of those people, I love service. I love our traditions. And I got so many reminders this week about, here's an example of the traditions. You know, we all know what they say intellectually. A lot of us can recite them off the top of our heads. But we're in situations where we thought, oh, wait a minute, this is what that looks like. Oh, okay. And that's exactly what I've experienced through the years in recovery. You know, the things we all read all the time and we know what they say. But then we get opportunities to practice. And I love that because it really grounds me in my recovery. So I'm very grateful to be able to serve in that way. I know that there's a lot that I could say about my story. I have had all kinds of experiences through the years. I've gotten fired from jobs. I've had all kinds of stuff. But the thing is, if I don't pick up the food, then I can move through the situation. I can know that I can do that. And if someone else crosses my path at some point going through the same thing, I can tell them I did. There's a reason for everything that happens in life. And if it isn't something else that I can put my thumb on so I know I can come through it successfully, I know I've got that. Now, I always like it when life's gentle, but if it doesn't feel that way on a given day, I've got that to hold on to and fall back on. And, you know, when I was thinking about this idea of see how it works, you know, of course physical evidence, of course all the things we do, but one of the lines really came to mind for me from Into Action. And it's this. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And that's all I know to do is practice one day at a time. I'm grateful we get to be in recovery together. Thanks, friends.
Hi, everyone. I'm Maria Christina. Hi. Good to see you all. Excuse me?
It's not working?
It is working. It's working. I wasn't working it. Just like the program. Just like the program. It works just like the program. So I am a happy, joyous, and free abstinent compulsive eater and food addict. So thrilled to be here today. And in terms of, I guess, let me do basics. I am a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. I have been abstinent for 10 years, 2 months, 5 days, day at a time by the grace of God and the astonishing power of this program. And in terms of and weight loss, okay, let me get all of that out of the way. Weight loss, I'm down approximately 95 pounds from my top weight, and 38 pounds is in CEA How, which is also amazing. And I've been on maintenance for 8.5 years. So, and maintenance is interesting. I was actually talking with somebody at lunch, and she said, you know, have you maintained your same weight? This is just what's coming, so I'm just going with it. She said, have you maintained your same weight? And I said, no, my weight has fluctuated pretty much since then, you know. And she said, did that bother you? I said, actually, at first, it freaked me out. But after a while, you know, I just go with the flow. And I had a very strong sponsor initially when I first started experiencing that. And what she said to me was, she said, trust the program. She said, if you focus on the recovery, you lose the weight. If you focus on the weight, you lose the recovery. Okay? And I've kept that with me. And so particularly at times when and it makes sense that weight fluctuates. It's a body. It's a living thing. It makes sense that it's not going to stay the same. So I've just come to deal with that and go with the flow. And in that, those times, like in any times that I'm facing any challenge in any aspect of my life, and I come to look at them as challenges. In other rooms they're called another freaking growth opportunity, basically. And I've gotten to a place where I welcome them. And so, anyway, in terms of how see how works, I see that in each of you sitting here. I see that in myself. Standing up here in front of you, being in California, doing all that I'm doing is evidence, huge evidence for me of how CEA How works. I would not be here if it were not for this program. And just to tell you a little bit about what I was like, before I came to CEA How, I was in OA How. And so I'm a How girl, 20 years. I had 10 years in OA How before I came in, and my group did not transition and become part of CEA How. But and there are differences in those programs. I call CEA How the evolution of that program, you know, because Fred S. took what he did initially and built upon it. And so when I came in, I was experiencing the second of 2 relapses in my first 10 years. And I'm in hindsight, I'm clear that was a result of half measures, which availed me nothing. It availed me some. I had stretches of abstinence, but stretches of abstinence is very different from continuous back-to-back abstinence. And the reason I say that is because when I first mentioned to you up here that I'm a happy, joyous, and free, I am today, but there was a whole lot of other stuff that led up until that point. There were points in time, you know, after particularly like around 5 years. And just like they say in our parent program, I think they say after 5 years you get your marbles back, and after 10 you learn how what to do with them, basically. And that's really what it feels like my experience is. And in that abstinence, I went through a point in time where, you know, like the big book says, I could neither imagine through life compulsively eating or not compulsively eating, you know, because when the food was removed for consistent days at a time, you know, many 24 hours at a time, that was my support, you know. And until I did enough of the work, and it's an ongoing process, and it's the steps and the tools for me, the tools are not an option. When I came from that other program, what I was like was I didn't want to make any phone calls. I didn't want to talk to anybody, okay? I went to maybe one meeting a week, did not want to write, and you know, literature, okay, yeah, if you read it in a meeting, I'll, you know, I might read something. But those phone calls, literature and writing, meetings, those were the things, some of the things. And I didn't want a sponsor. It was like, no, don't want to do that. And one day I shared that with somebody in a meeting, and they said to me, I didn't know it was an option. Okay, so and the message came, you know, as many messages have come from my higher power, and service I did very, very sparingly. So I basically, like I said, was doing half measures. And what I came to know and experience, when I came to see how I came beaten up enough, desperate enough, you know, the gift of desperation, and willing to completely surrender to this program as is written. And when I came in 10 years ago, I actually came in on May 1st, May Day, and that's when I came into OAHOW as well. But May 11th, I got all that crap out of the way initially. Initially when I was told that something about, you know, the three phone calls, I balked enormous. I was like, are you kidding me? And why can't I speak for 7 days? Who says? You know, I had all of that resistance, but I saw what you all had, the collective you all had, and I wanted it, and I was willing to go to any length. And so what that meant was completely surrendering to this program as is written, and I did that day one, and I continue to do that, and no matter what. My abstinence is priority, and as is my program. That comes first, and then everything else after it. And it stayed that way one day at a time. I've shared this before because some of you, especially from Phonebridge, and I got to tell you, Phonebridge has increased the depth and breadth of my abstinence, just me, I'm not speaking for anybody else, exponentially. Because what that Phonebridge did, it allowed me to get on, go to, not only use the other tools every day, I got to go to a meeting every day. I couldn't do that with face-to-face meetings. And I could go to more than one a day if I needed to. And the other thing that it did for me was I get distracted very easily. I guess there's probably some form of whatever, DD or whoever. It doesn't even matter, and I'm not interested in it. But what that did was I didn't get to see anybody, so I wasn't distracted. I wasn't worrying about who was there, who I'm looking at, who's looking at me, you know. And my focus was really sharp on the literature, because all the Phonebridge meetings I went to were literature-based, and I got to really know the literature, and that's where the solution is. And in hearing the solution day after day after day, my favorite meetings used to be those 7 a.m. meetings. We focused on came to believe, as Bill sees it, the 12, and Wednesday was 12 and 12, see how concept and tools on Thursday, and the first 164 pages of the big book on Friday, speaker meeting on Saturday, and personal stories of the big book on Sunday. It covered everything, and that's where the platform for my process came from, you know, and that's what kept me in the solution, fully engaged in the solution, because without that full engagement, left to my own devices, I'm just going to start thinking crazy thoughts again. And I've done that for years, years and years and years and years. And another piece of my recovery process and what happened to change me was understanding that once I put the food down, there was other stuff underneath that food, okay, that needed to be dealt with. And that's a message I got very early on in CEA How from seeing other people, was that deal with that stuff, the codependency, the debting, the debt, the debt, the debt, the debt. All there's a whole list. It got to the point where my the list of things on my powerless list of the things that I was powerless over. I used to joke. I kept it on Scott's 1,000 sheets because I became powerless. I was powerless over food. I was powerless over people, places, and things. Powerless over debt. Powerless over my creativity. Powerless over, you know, the addict or alcoholic. And by the way, I was actually 12 steps into another program that's designed to deal with people, addicts and anons, I'll just say. My sponsor, my first See How sponsor, she 12-stepped and she said she goes to that other program so she could stay in the See How rooms. Because guess what? I'm not medicated, and I'm dealing with everyone else that now is not medicated. And again, I didn't have tools for that. I didn't get the manual. Okay, and the steps and the tools have provided me with the literal tools and the figurative, the operating, the literature, the operating manual, and the tools are the mechanics. They keep me connected and accessing these steps. And that's how the steps became a way of life for me, literally. I lived them, I worked them, and nowadays it's about the spiritual principles of the steps. And they apply to everything. Some of you heard me speak last night. They apply to that. Thank you. So is that time, Roberta? Okay, thank you. So the last thing I just want to say is what has become my favorite tool, which I hated, was writing, literature, writing. I've gotten to the point where just like with my meditation, I would no sooner do without my writing, just like I would no sooner do without my meditation, because that tool of self-examination and release has been one of the most powerful aspects of my program. It has facilitated enormous, enormous growth. So I've been asked to wrap it up, so I will do that now, but I'm so grateful to have been here and shared with you, and it's just fabulous being amongst my folks. So thanks very much.
What do you think? Fabulous, huh? Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody. Every single one of you, I would have loved to hear you another 30 minutes. Thank you so much for being available. So now we get another a fun little 15-minute spot right now that if you guys have any questions. Unfortunately, you'll probably have to come up here. Is that correct? Because we want to record them, and they have to be in the mic to be able to record, and they'll have to sign as well. So would any of you like to come up? Do you have any questions for anyone in the panel? Or do you want to hear them talk some more? No questions? Valerie, you have another 5 minutes. Yeah, come on up. You sign that real quick. There you go.
My question for you, the panel, thank you so much for sharing. How do you deal with the image of society and accepting yourself when you're still not at the weight you want to be at? Like you work with the fluctuating. You said, yeah, you know, we're a living, breathing body. So how do you overcome your tools, your literature? Like there was something earlier that was said that your family, like my husband, he keeps saying, just like drumming the fingers on. So whatever you're doing isn't working because you're not changing. So other people's pressure.
I don't know. My name is Rowdy. I'm a compulsive eater. For me, it's part of it is just it takes what it takes. And everybody's different. I sponsor a lot of people. Some people lose weight really quickly. Some people don't. And I see so much frustration. But the funny part is it's always a surprise. Like, oh, I still hate the way I look. Well, are you surprised? How many years did you hate the way you looked? It's not just going to go away. I'm sorry. Even after I lost the weight, it didn't just go away. It took time for me to start to love the way that I looked, you know, because, again, I had a lifetime of not knowing how to do that. It was a new skill I needed to learn and a new way of thinking. And I also was so obsessed about what you thought, you know, and that was another piece that I had to let go. I had to slowly do the writing, do the work, talk to my sponsor, talk to other people to slowly learn to let go of this obsession about how you thought I looked, you know. So that's my experience with that.
Margie, compulsive eater. I can identify, oh gosh, you know, and I got to say, being on maintenance doesn't mean I don't still have body image stuff, you know. And it's not like it's every week exactly the same. Now, I've gone long periods of time where that was true, but earlier this month, I gained 5 pounds in 1 week. Now, that'll make you humble, you know? And so what do I do? What are the choices I make? You know, what am I committing to my sponsor? And I get to focus in on that. And I don't like the way I feel in my body sometimes. I still don't. But it is a journey living in our society and dealing with, I was reminded last night, what other people think of me. None of my business, you know? And what I found is with time in this program, the pressures from family, from other people, the more grounded I've got in this program, the easier it is to just be confident in what I'm doing. And what it's meant sometimes is my family cannot be my primary support system. I really do have to count on my sponsor and the outreach calls and let people know what's going on and hear their experience, strength, and hope. And that's helped me to be strong in knowing inside myself that I'm doing the right thing one day at a time.
Hi, Maria Christine again. So for me, my codependence, because that's what that is, caring way too much about what other people think. I had to deal with that in other programs, other 12-step programs, and was fortunate that I went to deal with it in that way. And for me, that's where I learned how to set boundaries. And not only is it none of my business what anyone else thinks of me, it's none of anybody else's business what I do. And no one gets in between me and my program. No one. No one, no how. Like, it's about abstinence no matter what, no matter who, no matter where. And I learned after my first few years in the program, in conjunction with doing that other work, to set boundaries, you know, clear, very clear energetic and as well as physical boundaries. And no one gets, and the more I did that, the more I practiced boundaries, the better I got at setting them. And the other component was, it was about doing the, it's a threefold issue. It's not just physical, but it's emotional and spiritual. And I had to really, really get into the core emotional stuff and develop and strengthen my connection with my higher power. You know, because the closer I am to higher power, that's what keeps me grounded, and that's what helps me set the boundaries and do what I have to do and keep first things first. So, thanks.
If you don't mind, I'd like to add to that. Come for the vanity, stay for the sanity. I've got 11 years in program, and I'm still growing. I'm not recovered. I am recovering. And the more I work my program, the more I grow, and I get to grow up in this program along with all of you. So I think we have to wrap that up now because they have to set this room up for the workshop. So thank you all for coming, and thank you again, panel. I loved hearing all your shares, and I look forward to doing outreach calls with you. You'll be hearing from me. Thank you so much.